Today's teaching text is 1 Samuel 1, 1 through 20. It can be found on page 249 of the Shed Bibles. There was a certain man from Ramathaim, a Zuphite from the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, son of Jeronim, son of Elihu, son of Tohu, son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. He had two wives. One was called Hannah, and the other Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had none. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas were two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of meat to his wife Peninnah and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion, because he loved her and the Lord had closed her womb. Because the Lord had closed Hannah's womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her until she wept and would not eat. Her husband Elkanah would say to her, "Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Once, when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli the priest was sitting on his chair by the doorpost of the Lord's house. In her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. She made a vow, saying, "Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor shall ever be used on his head." As she kept praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, "How long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine." "Not so, my lord," Hannah replied. "I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief." Eli answered, "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant what you asked of him." She said, "May your servant find favor in your eyes." And then she went away and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Early the next morning, they arose and worshiped before the Lord, and then went back to their home at Ramah. Elkanah made love to his wife Hannah, and the Lord remembered her. So in the course of time, Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying, "Because I asked the Lord for him." This is the word of the Lord.
Sorry, I already started talking because I thought we were going to hit each other on the stairs. It is a delight to be with you this morning. You know, Troy was really a delight to have in class, and who knows if I gave him that grade or if he earned that grade, but he was truly a delight to have in class. But I am delighted to be here and see him in his element with his nuclear family and with his extended family. So it's really an honor to be with you this morning. I'm glad to be here, and I am really happy for us to be looking at the story of Hannah this morning. When we think about Hannah, we have to think about being in between one thing and something else. It's where much of our lives exists. You know, to be fully honest, our life is kind of in between birth and death. I'm not trying to be depressing here, but this is what we do. We can't wait to grow up. We spend a lot of our time as grown-ups waiting, and then we wait, often, not all of us, till that end. We are in between that space. We don't think about it that way, but we're always in between birth and death. And that space is called a liminal space. But it's more than just that. Much of our life is in between who we were and who we will be. It's adolescence, no longer a child, not yet an adult. In between. It's liminal, but it's more than biological stage. Education, You just blessed all these people to go. But education is a liminal state. You know, students pass through liminal states to earn degrees. No longer a child, not yet a high school grad, not yet a college grad, not yet a master's, not yet a doctor. We're always in between when we're in education. But it's more than an in-between whose outcome is predictable. There are certain outcomes that are predictable. You know, the in-between of adolescence generally has the outcome of adulthood. The in-between of education generally has the outcome of graduation, right? There's still students in here. Don't drop out, right? All right, don't keep, or you're going there. But what about those in-betweens whose outcome is just not clear? You know, liminality, sometimes that in-between happens when our lives don't turn out the way we expected. My life has in so many ways not turned out the way I expected, and those outcomes were often very unclear. Unemployment is a liminal stage. We say it's in between jobs. At least we hope. We hope that we'll get that next position. Extended unemployment, a longer time of in between. Chronic migraines, fibromyalgia, leukemia, stage 4 cancer, all in between a state of health, and we're not sure, perhaps a state of renewed health, and perhaps not. We've all been in the in-between liminal state in multiple different places, haven't we? I have. Unemployment, I've been there. Very recently, in fact. Infertility, I've been there. Single with a deep desire to be married, I've been there. You know, much of our life is lived in that liminal space, in the in-between, when life has not turned out the way we expected. And this is where we find Hannah in 1 Samuel 1. Hannah has a lot to teach us about living liminality well. Hannah's infertile. She joins a line of multiple different women in the Bible who are infertile, fertile. Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, New Testament, Elizabeth, Mary, kind of not really infertile, but it's all followed by a miraculous birth. This is a continued motif in Scripture, but it doesn't talk about the difficulty of that in-between space. You know, when we think about the books of 1 and 2 Samuel, we remember the later characters very well. We remember Samuel, we remember Saul, we remember David, but we often overlook Hannah. But Hannah's story is placed there intentionally by the author, and intentionally, I would say, by God, to kind of preform the other stories. Hannah's story, her liminal story, her story of infertility followed by a miraculous birth, is the liminal story of the people of Israel at the time, the people of God, at that time 3,000 years ago, not to be confused with the political state of Israel today. I just want to throw that out there. Hannah's story is also our story. The liminal story is our story. She prefigures Samuel, she prefigures Saul, she prefigures David. She is the paradigm. That's why we're looking at her today. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to look at Hannah's story, big picture. We're going to focus on what she teaches us about liminality, and then we're going to practice her response to liminality. So big picture. Life hasn't turned out the way Hannah expected. Hannah expected to get married young. Hannah expected directly after her marriage to have children. Hannah expected to have a life that was marriage and children. So she married a really good man. His name's Elkanah. You hear about all his parents, like his lineage there. It's to prove that he's a good, faithful man. He's also not just religious in that he does the rituals, but he has a deep faith in God, because they were supposed to go and worship at Shiloh, which is before the temple. So Shiloh is the place where the tabernacle was, because the temple was only built under Solomon, much later kings. And so they were supposed to go there 3 times a year, but he went there an extra time. with his family, this extra time. So he is a really, really good man. And the worship that they did at that time meant going, so they left their homes. It meant sacrificing, they gave up things. It also meant eating and drinking and sharing in that sacrifice. All of that was their worship of God. So Hannah's expectation of marrying a good man was fulfilled. She probably thought it was only going to be her and Elkanah and her kids. But years passed. She didn't even have a daughter. What was valued in the society was a male heir, but she didn't have a daughter. She didn't have a son. Her dream, her expectations were frustrated. So the text says God closed Hannah's womb, and having an open womb was all she wanted. Her expectations were frustrated. She found herself in a state of infertility. It's an undesired state of in-between, of liminality. Now, the stories here a little bit different from the story of Sarah, Rachel, and Leah, who had a time of infertility and then said, here, husband, take my maidservant, have a baby with them. Weird stuff, friends. You know, God's not all into polygamy. Just want to throw that out there also. God's desire is for monogamous marriage, but this is what happened in the culture and society at the time. And so she didn't say, hey, take my maidservant, Elkanah, have a baby with her. We don't know who chose Peninnah. Was it Elkanah? Did he choose this other woman? Was it his family? Was it her family? We don't know how this came about, but here's this other wife of the husband that I thought was only going to be me with. So when the story starts, Hannah's the loved but infertile wife. Peninnah is the fertile wife and maybe not quite as loved. And Hannah's infertile liminality is completely overwhelming to her. She can't even fully engage in worship. Remember all those aspects of worship? She can't eat. So she can't fully worship God. And in desperation and in desperate prayer, she weeps and prays at the tabernacle. Now, friends, here's another way that she prefigures these other people later on in the story. She prefigures Samuel, she prefigures Saul, she prefigures David. She's the only woman who weeps and prays at this place, recorded in the Old Testament. She is there. She's prefiguring the kings and the prophets who similarly pray and beg God to save their people. And while she's praying, she makes a vow. Now, this promise that she makes seems a little odd to us, but in laments, which is what she's doing, she's lamenting. We're going to talk about what that means. But in laments, there's often a vow made to God, and this is what she says. She says, Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. Hannah is offering her deepest lament to God. What happens usually after a vow? And after you've offered the deep lament, you make a promise in lament psalms. Happens all the time in the Psalms. Laments are one third of the Psalms in Scripture. There's also an assurance that God will answer. So in the story that was read, you hear Eli say a blessing on her. She takes that as truth, that God is going to answer her. And what does she do? She goes and she worships. She eats. She was unable to do so. She poured out her heart to God, and suddenly she's able to worship in a different way. She goes home. She's soon pregnant. And then after 4 years, she returns to Shiloh, to the tabernacle, to worship with God and her son. And at that point, and we could spend a long time talking about this, but we're not going to today. At that point, she leaves her child there. He's probably about 4 years old, to grow up there. She fulfills what she promised to God. And she gives him over to worship God all his life. We didn't read the next chapter, and I encourage you, when you go wherever you go this afternoon, that you read the next chapter and you read Hannah's psalm of praise. Her words in that psalm of praise are echoed by David elsewhere later on. Her words in that song of praise are echoed by Mary In the New Testament, we call it her Magnificat. Those words are extremely important as she praises God for fulfilling and giving her what she asked of. The final portion of Hannah's story, which we also didn't read, is in chapter 2. The verses are 18 to 21. And it says that they still go up to Shiloh every year. And when they go up to Shiloh, she brings Samuel, her son, a robe. And he wears that robe as he continues to worship. And I think about Hannah during that year as she misses her child, even though the text does state that she was given many children after that. God blessed her. She was given, I have the number, 3 sons and 2 daughters. But I imagine she still missed Samuel. And I imagine her creating that robe during that time, which is kind of a mini liminality between the times of seeing her kid. You know, Hannah's liminal story is her story. But Hannah's liminal story is also the story of the people of God at the time as they are waiting and longing for God to show up, and God shows up in the person of David. Hannah's liminal story is also our liminal story. When we're thinking about the Israelites, the 1st and 2nd Samuel comes right after the story of Judges. And Walter Brueggemann, who's an incredible commentator, highly recommend his work, writes of the liminality of the people in this way. They're in a horrible spot. In the face of that external threat, Israel is politically weak and economically disadvantaged. But there's also moral, theological dimension to Israel's trouble. By the end of the book of Judges, Israel is shown to be a community in moral chaos, engaged in brutality, betrayed by undisciplined religion. And Israel does not seem to have the capacity or the will to extricate itself from its troubles. God's people's expectations are frustrated, and they're waiting in the liminality like Hannah. Hannah's liminality is also our story. Let's talk about that liminal state, that place of being in between, the place of your life being frustrated or your expectations frustrated. Our states of liminality do not always end in a miraculous birth. They don't always end in the expectations being somehow fulfilled. That's just the way it is in our world. We do hope for eternity, but often there is an end, sometimes an unexpected and very good end, to our states of liminality. So what do we learn from Hannah about liminality? You know, we can look at Hannah's infertility as a motif. We see infertility a lot in Scripture. What does this mean about God? What does this mean about people? We can look at Hannah's infertility as an act of God's will. You know, verse 5 says that the Lord had closed her womb. We can also look at her pregnancy as an act of God's will. What I want to do for us this morning, though, is to enter into her infertility as a long period of liminality whose outcome just isn't clear, because I think that's where we spend most of our lives. You know, in her culture, much of her value is measured by whether she has kids. Her culture expects her to be a mom. She wants to be a mom. She's married. And she expected that soon after her marriage, she'd become a mom. Has Hannah miscarried? Perhaps. Many of you know the pain of miscarriage and then the courage that it takes to re-enter to that time of liminality and waiting for that positive pregnancy test, or that time of that liminal first trimester, which seems really precarious, or even the next 2 trimesters that seem slightly less precarious. Some of you know that kind of courage that it takes. Infertility is not uncommon, both for women or for men in our world. Hannah's story displays 3 important ideas about liminality that I want us to explore this morning. First, liminality is really hard. Second, people say unhelpful things when we're liminal. And third, lamenting our liminality helps. If you're alive, I don't think you're surprised that liminality is really hard. When you're in between things, it's just really hard. Some liminal spaces are harder than others, but even in adolescence, it is really hard. And in that liminal space, even if you know the outcome, I don't know anyone who says their adolescent years were the best years ever. I heard a giggle. That was good. Yeah, they weren't my best years. There were great things that happened there. But here's how Hannah's response to her liminality is described. Verse 7 says she wept and would not eat. When I'm in an in-between space, not eating is not the way I respond to it. But she wept and didn't eat. Verse 10 says she's in deep anguish and weeping bitterly. Verse 11 says she's in misery. Verse 15 says she's deeply troubled. Verse 16 says she has anguish and grief. That's a lot of words about sadness. We put them all together. Hannah responds to the liminality of infertility by weeping bitterly in the misery of her deep anguish and grief that she can't eat. She can't worship. Liminality is really hard. And people say unhelpful things when we're liminal. I don't know if you've experienced that. But there are three different actors in this story who say unhelpful things. One is unkind, one is kind, and one is just kind of odd. So Peninnah, the other wife, she is unkind. You know, the two wives of Elkanah are called rivals. It says Peninnah provoked her in order to irritate her, but it seems like a little bit more than irritation because Hannah responds by weeping and not eating. Peninnah seems conscious and jealous of Elkanah's preference for Hannah. Not unlike Leah was jealous of Jacob's preference for Rachel. But unlike Leah and Sarah, Rachel doesn't seem to respond. Sorry, Hannah doesn't seem to respond to Peninnah. Sometimes the people that say things aren't worth responding to, or their words are not worth responding to. And then there's Elkanah, Hannah's husband. He gives Hannah a double portion, just like as if she's the firstborn. She's clearly loved and favored by God. You know, we don't know. Elkanah's heart might be broken too. He may simply be trying to comfort her with his words. And he says this, Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Really, Elkanah? You're making my infertility about you and about how much you mean to me? You mean a whole bunch to me, husband. You mean more to me than 10 sons, but I still want a baby. These things don't cancel each other out. But again, Hannah wisely, because that's how I would respond, but probably a little bit louder. Hannah wisely does not actually respond to Elkanah. And then there's Eli. You know, Eli is supposed to be the priest, supposed to be the pastor. He sees a woman walk into the tabernacle, weeping bitterly, and stand there, lips moving, while she prays and makes vows to the Lord. But Eli hears nothing because you're supposed to be praying out loud. And, you know, Eli very pastorally thinks she's just drunk. Now, to be fair, there's a lot of eating and drinking happening in worship. It's part of the worship, and maybe he thought that she was there, but he says to her, how long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine. You know, it's interesting that Hannah doesn't respond to Peninnah. She doesn't respond to Elkanah, but she responds to the priest, who's the person in charge of the worship, and she says this, I'm a woman who's deeply troubled. I've not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I've been praying right here out of my anguish and grief. And then Eli responds to her with a blessing of answered prayer. And she goes and she eats and she continues to worship. Have you experienced people's unhelpful words during your time of liminality? In January, I was in a state of unemployment and my mom was really sick. And so because I had a flexible schedule, I was able to spend a lot of time taking care of my mother. And some very, very well-meaning and kind people said to me, well, there's a reason you're unemployed. Kind of saying, oh, so that you can take care of your mom. And I'm like, I'm not going to answer you. But if you're trying to make this all this theological reason why my school closed and why I had to deal with everything that meant of unemployment and it was only for that and that's God's reason, just kind of be careful. I don't know if you've ever read the book, Kate Bowler's book, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved. I see some nods over here. We want to say something because we want to comfort. And we often experience in our liminality pain already, but some unhelpful things that are coming from others. You know, the God we worship cares for us in our liminality. And frequently we try to figure out the reason, but let's be honest, sometimes we'll never know this side of eternity, and maybe in eternity it won't matter. We don't have to respond to the unhelpful things everyone says. Hannah didn't. But Hannah lamented in her liminality. And lamenting clearly helped her. The lament is one third of the Psalms. These are lament Psalms. And these Psalms contain three parts. Some people say that there are more, but three primary parts. The first is to complain. It's basically like, God, this is not okay. And there's this like, all is not right with the world. God, will you fix this? And I already ran to the second part. All is not right with the world. This is what's wrong. This is what's wrong. That's the complaint. The second portion is an asking for help. God, will you help me? Will you do this? And the third portion of the complaint is trust, declaring that they trust that God is going to act on their behalf. You know, Hannah's been lamenting a lot, weeping and being bitter and crying and not eating. Has she always brought this to God? We don't know. But what we do know is that in this story, she brings this directly to God in the place where God was understood to dwell at the tabernacle. Ever since we were children, we've been told not to complain. And as I was preparing for this, I was probably telling my kids to use a different voice. I've got a 7 and a 9-year-old at home. Because you know that voice, that complaining voice that comes out of small children? No, none of you do. It's only my kids. There's this voice. We've always been told not to complain. And we don't like to hear other people's complaints. We don't always hang out with people who are complainers, right? But complaining to God is different from me complaining to you. My Old Testament professor would say complaining to God is backwards praise. Because if I can't complain to you, most of the time you can't do anything about it. But if I complain to God, I'm actually acknowledging that God is all-powerful and can do something about what is wrong in my life or what is wrong in the world. It is a way of praise when we complain to God. But never stop with the complaint. Continue. This may be cyclical. I don't know what it is in my life. But don't stop with that complaint, but continue. You know, Hannah asks God for help, and she makes a vow. She promises God something. I'm not saying you have to promise God something, but it's just one of those common things that you see in this style of praising God in the lament. And then she trusts God in her actions. She believes that God will answer her request and then acts in a completely different way right after that. She doesn't act only after God has answered. She acts immediately, and her words display a trust in God's action, even while she's waiting. Does it mean she's no longer sad? Unlikely. These things we often hold in two hands at the same time. You know, Hannah's liminal story, it's her story. It's the story of the people of God at the time, and it's also our story. I imagine that maybe you are in a state of liminality. Our nation certainly is. At a time in election year, it's always a liminal time. Walter Brueggemann, again, he writes this in talking about Hannah. In a daring move back behind the great men, like Saul and Samuel and David, the narrative locates the origin of Israel's future and the source of its great leaders in the story of a bereft, barren woman named Hannah. The story of Israel's waiting that moves from trouble to well-being begins neither in grand theory nor in a palace splendor nor in doxological celebration. It begins rather in a single Ephraimite family, whose father has a solid family pedigree, but whose mother is barren, without children, and without the prospect of children. our story of waiting begins in barrenness, wherein there's no hint of a future. Israel's waiting, which culminates in David, begins as Hannah's waiting begins, in hopelessness. Those who read the narrative are invited to listen and to notice. In the midst of such barren hopelessness, in the midst of that liminality, fruitful waiting, hoping, and receiving can indeed happen. Hannah's liminal story of barren hopelessness, fruitful waiting, hoping, and receiving happened for her. In God's people's story, fruitful waiting, hoping, and receiving happened for them in the person of David. And I want to suggest that in the midst of our liminal story, fruitful waiting, hoping, and receiving can indeed happen. I want to invite you to a few moments of an opportunity to do what Hannah actually did. I'm going to invite you to lament your liminality, whatever it is, wherever you are. So in kind of a spirit of prayer, eyes open, eyes closed, you decide, I invite you to do this. If you have feet, if you want to, or some part of your body, kind of press it to the ground and just be in this present moment right now. Maybe take a couple deep breaths. Kind of center on God's presence and invite God's presence to be with you right now. And I invite you to put your hands in front of you as a kind of cup to hold your complaint, whatever that complaint is, personal, church, community, national, worldwide. Would you complain to God? Tell God what's not right with the world. You can murmur it. You can do it just in silently. Put it in those hands. When you're ready, would you lift those complaints up to God, physically above your head, and ask God for help? You can even make plans for how you think God should help. God, would you help us? And when you're ready, I invite you to kind of open your hands, push those complaints out, bring your arms around you to your side, and say these words from Psalm 27 with me. I remain confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. Amen.